And welcome to Dad's on the Air. This is Phil from Dad's in Distress. It's Tuesday the 31st of March. You can listen to this program by live streaming on the 89.3 FM website, or you can download this program after the show on www.dadsontheair.net. We have a very interesting show today for you all. It is a special on Dad's in Distress. As I said, my name's Phil York, and I actually am one of the employees for Dads in Distress, the Western Sydney Project Coordinator. As we've been reporting over some time in this program, Dads in Distress is a support group for guys that are going through the separation process. It looks like our funding is about to end, so we're dedicating today to, I guess, get the story out in regards to Dads in Distress. So we'll be talking with the founder, Tony Miller. We'll also have on Barry Williams, who is the president of the Lone Fathers Association. We'll be talking to some of the facilitators, and we'll also obviously be talking to some of the dads and getting their candid, information in regards to what they think Dads in Distress is about and how it's helped them. In the studio today with me, I have Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Good morning, Phil. Good morning, listeners.
Rock and Pop.
Good morning, Phil. Good to be back.
And we also have Scott Hayes, who helps us along the way with Dads in Distress.
Good morning, Phil, and good morning, listeners.
Thank you very much. And let's get into the news. What do we have, Ian?
Well, there's an article in last Thursday's Telegraph, the usual bloke bashing stuff. Angela Soreen, the social affairs reporter, or perhaps she should be called the anti-social affairs, under the heading, "Mow Me Down, Blokes Finally Find the Laundry," our Angela has written, "Men have come in off the lawn and found their way into the kitchen. But while males are doing more traditionally female," and that's an inverted commas, "chores, such as cooking and laundry, women still do more housework, shock horror, despite their growing role in the workplace. Women did two-thirds of all work around the home in 2006, while men did two-thirds of paid work. Although women still do most indoor tasks and men most outdoor tasks, roles are becoming less rigid." Well, isn't that wonderful? So they've got us in there cleaning up, doing the house, doing all the women's work, all the housework. I would just like to play a little segment from Rich Zubati, what he has to say about all that. So just bear with me for a second here. This is Rich Zubati.
"Are men the oppressors of women, or are women the oppressors of men? A woman wakes up in the morning in a house built by men. She starts the water to boil on a stove built by men and sits at a chair and table put there by men to read a newspaper written in part by women but printed and delivered by men. She nibbles some toast made from grains grown and harvested by men. Whoops! Time to take a shower. She turns a faucet handle installed by a man, and lo and behold, out comes hot water delivered by a vastly complicated water system built and maintained by men. She drives to work in a car built by men, on roads built by men, powered by petroleum, drilled and refined and delivered by men. She arrives at an office building built by men, walks to her desk, fires up her computer, and glances out her window at a city built by men."
So I think you can get the drift of all of that. And now they also expect us to do all the bloody housework, all the cooking, all the cleaning, as well as putting down the toilet seat and everything else. So there you go. Anybody else?
Well, things may be changing a little, Purdy. In today's Australian, there's an article written by Caroline Overton. It's headed, "Mother Loses Kids for Anti-Dad Stance." Something that I guess we're all here about, wanting more contact with our children, and parental alienation is one of the reasons how it comes about, how they separate us from our children. She writes, two children who have been in the care of their mother since their parents separated in 2005 have been sent from Hobart to live with their father in Melbourne after the family court heard the mother encouraged them to have negative feelings about their dad. Well, we've seen all that before.
Yes, parental alienation syndrome is alive and well.
But actually, this judge has actually changed custody. The two children, a girl aged 9 and a boy aged 7, had been struggling with changeovers between parents, saying things such as, I don't want to go, I don't have to go, when their father arrived in Tasmania from Melbourne to collect them for access visits. The court found that the mother did not discourage them from saying these things and did not encourage a positive relationship between the children and their father. The children told counsellors they were angry their father had left their mother and lived with his new girlfriend in Melbourne. So the family court judge, Robert Benjamin, said the children clearly wanted to stay with their mother, who had been their primary carer since birth, and acknowledged the disruption to the children's family unit and their stability if they were to live with their move to live with their father. Anyway, the kids are moved to Melbourne to live with the father, so maybe the courts are finally waking up.
Isn't that fantastic? About time we got a decision that went the way of the dads.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, dad's got a bit of a battle on his hand to try and bring these kids back to you know, being wholesome again and not having these negative attitudes and you know...
poison.
Yeah, poison, you know. Parental alienation, the effects that it has on children is devastating.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's really good to see that the courts have finally started to you know, maybe recognise it, but at least have acted in this case. And, you know, it's the start, hopefully.
The trouble is changing them from one parent to the other doesn't necessarily fix it all because, like as the Belgian model showed, what they do, if one parent doesn't give the children over on at changeover time, then it becomes a kidnapping abduction case and the police will knock on the door and say, where's the kids? Dad's got to have them or mum's got to have them. Just giving them to one of the other parents allows that parent to then do basically what they want.
That's it, and it's all that emotional stuff, Pete. You know, it's all the emotional stuff that the parent puts on the children and, you know, brainwashing or whatever you want to call it, but it's certainly alienating them against one of their parents. So, yeah, not good stuff, and it's great to hear that the courts have at least taken into account.
Slowly but sure. Good thing John Stapleton's not in here this morning. He would hate to hear us saying something good about the family court.
All right, well, let's go to a track, and then we'll be back with Tony Miller.
Why does my heart feel so bad? Why does my soul feel so bad? Why does my heart feel so bad? Why does my soul feel so bad? Why does my heart? Why does my soul does my heart feel so bad? Why does my soul feel so bad?
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air. And welcome back. You're listening to Dads on the Air, and this is the Dads in Distress special. We're currently waiting for Tony Miller to give us a call. He's actually in a meeting at the moment with the National Stakeholders Committee for Child Support Agency, and he's finding it a little difficult to get away. So while we're waiting for Tony to call in, what I'm going to play now is a 7-minute interview in which Tony explains pretty much what is required to open up a Dads in Distress group in your local suburb or town. If anyone listening to this, if you think you could be the type of person who is willing to give it a go, please phone the DIDS line, which is 1300 853 437, and we'll give you more information. So just have a listen to this. Thanks.
What if I wanted to start a group? What kind of person would I need to be to do that?
You need to be a good listener. Yeah, that's probably number one. Yeah, you need to have a big heart. To volunteer to open a group, I guess, is there's no expertise necessary. It's just simply to have some compassion, you know. I often say, you know, kindness and compassion is the rent we pay for the space we inhabit on this earth. And that's really what it's about. You know, it's showing some compassion, some kindness, and being able to, you know, put a hand out to your fellow man. You know, and, in fact, most of the facilitators that come into Dads in Distress, it ends up helping them just as much as it helps the guys. It's a huge step, and it's a huge, you know, huge experience over the time that you're involved in it.
Are the men who are facilitating ordinarily Dads in Distress themselves?
Definitely, definitely. I think that's part of why it works. It's simply that, because, you know, they're certainly getting help. You know, we're not experts in the field, so to speak. You know, we're simply there to allow guys to come and talk about their feelings. You know, you don't have to be an expert to do that. You need to be a good listener. And it's not just listening, it's also allowing that guy or having him understand that he's being heard. You know, big difference, you know, and very, very important.
I think I had the idea that you would need to be a counselor or that sort of thing. I'm kind of getting the idea that perhaps you don't have to be a professional of any kind to do this sort of work.
No, you don't. You need to know, you know, your perimeters. You need to know what you can do and what you can offer and what you can't. And what you can't, you can refer people on. You can refer your clients on to a counselor or to a legal person or to whoever they might need. But initially, you just need to be a good listener.
So what's involved in starting a group? What do you have to go through?
Well, simply in the beginning, I mean, you need to secure a venue. Unfortunately, we're not funded to pay for venues at this stage of the game, but we certainly, we'd help where we can. But it's a matter of going around and seeing the local church groups, the local Rotary, whoever it might be in the town, the local community centre, neighbourhood centre, trying to secure a venue either free or for as little cost as possible. It is a service that you're providing to the community here. You're saving lives. So it's a very important step, and you need to tell them that. So that's the initial part. We need to get that happening. A venue, I guess, is the first point of call.
And Tony Miller is on the line with us now. He's just managed to get out of this meeting. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
Morning, Phil. How are you, mate?
Not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Thank you for coming on air today and giving us 10 minutes of your time, mate. I understand
no
you're quite busy up there at the Child Support National Stakeholder Meeting.
Yes, it's just started, mate. that's yep,
no worries. All right. We'll keep this as brief as possible, mate. But obviously, we're doing our Dads in Distress special today. I'd like to talk to you about, I guess, your personal journey so far. You know, you've been doing this since 1999, working tirelessly day in, day out. You're a father of seven. You have all these responsibilities outside Dads in Distress as well. Can you tell us about the first time you thought about reaching out to other men to talk to and how you came to start Dads in Distress?
Well, it was simply a case that, you know, at the time I went through it myself and was pretty devastated, you know, gutted, depressed, lonely, suicidal, all those things and more, and just needed to reach out to other guys. I thought, if I'm going through this, there's got to be a lot of other people going through the same sort of depression and journey that I was going on at the time. And hence I just simply put a bit of a story I wrote into a local newspaper up in Coffs Harbour about the way I was feeling and not knowing what sort of, that I'd get anyone contacting me or anything else. It was just a matter of expressing how I was feeling. And I was inundated from day one. And we had guys coming from all sorts of areas with a similar pain, similar stories, and that's how it started. We just started meeting on a veranda in a neighbourhood centre in Coffs Harbour. Simply talking about our grief, if you like, and that's what it was. It was simply separation grief, I believe, from being separated from our children.
Yep.
You know, it was devastating.
Absolutely, mate. And so you had this meeting in Coffs Harbour. I assume it went. Did it go weekly in the first time?
We met once a week on the veranda out there of an evening. We used to meet on a Sunday night because at the time that's when we took our kids back after having access, if we were lucky enough to get the access at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday nights was probably the worst night of the week because we'd taken them back after having the weekend with them and felt pretty low. So we thought that would be the opportune time. We were all at a loss, you know.
Yep.
Many guys report that, you know, they sort of come alive when they got their kids on the weekends and then they die again when they take them back. And that's basically what it was like for me and what it was like for a lot of other guys.
Yeah. So, you know, during those meetings in Coffs Harbour, I guess everyone saw the value of what it was just to come and meet with other dads that are going through a similar situation.
It certainly was. It was a relief to hear, you know, strange as it may seem, that you weren't the only one. You know, it was a relief to find that, geez, somebody else is going through this. Somebody understands my pain. They understand what I'm going through. And that was the most important thing. I'd talk to everybody that wanted to hear, or even those that didn't want to hear when I was going through it. And I was telling them my story until the point where, you know, a lot of people avoided me at the time. But when I met a bunch of guys that understood how I was feeling, understood what I was missing and understood the pain, then it was a different scenario. We were able to express our grief and get rid of it, you know, get it out. And that was the most important and valuable thing about these meetings, was a simple case of having a safe place to be able to go in and say, geez, this is how I'm feeling, and somebody to understand how I was feeling. Not to give me any, you know, golden ticket or any special advice, but just to hear me. That was very, yep, very important.
So in the midst of all this grief and all this anxiety and all the separation stuff that happens, all your emotions and feelings,
yeah,
from there you've even decided to go and open more groups. What made you do that?
Well, simply because we knew that the service was needed. We knew, you know, I just got contacted by, as the story went out, there was a Today Show, I think it was, that did a story on us at the time, and it, as soon as that went to air, we had 30,000 hits on a website the next morning. You know, the phones just ring off the wall. And, you know, I just had people from all over Australia wanting, saying, geez, I'm in the same boat. You know, we need a hand. We need a hand. And that's how it was right from day one. Problem was, we just never had the money. We didn't have the day to do what we wanted to do. Had we, there'd be probably three times as many groups out there. But, you know, you need dollars. You need good money to do good work. And unfortunately, we've never had it.
Yeah, that's right, mate. I guess that just leads me just to my next question. You know, through this journey that's, you know, 9 or 10 years onwards now, at what point did the government finally realise that Dads in Distress offered fathers in the community a lot of value and decided to fund the organisation?
It was fairly early in the piece that we got some, a local member in Coffs Harbour that at the time that approached government for us, and certainly we got some money. It wasn't a lot of money. I think we got about $40,000 or something to start off with. I mean, men's traditionally in Australia, men's programs have not been funded very well in this country. So it was unusual. It was unusual for a dad's group to get some dollars, and we got some money just to be able to kick us off and get us rolling, and that was wonderful. And that showed us that, gee, you know, there is something, you know, that government sees as worthwhile as well as us, and that was very important to us. More so than the money, it was recognition. And recognition to each guy that turned up at a meeting that government understood his pain as well as he did. And so that was the important part about funding, you know. It wasn't the dollars to do all the work, it was more so recognition.
Yeah, g'day Tony, it's Scott Hayes. Just as an aside to that, when you first started the group nationally, were you surprised by how many people were interested in it, or were you expecting that?
No, I was surprised. I was certainly surprised. You know, I had no idea. When I wrote that letter in that local paper, I was just a guy going through the pain. I had no idea how big the problem was. I certainly believed there were others out there, but to what extent, I had no idea until they started pouring in. And they certainly poured in, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, it hasn't gotten any less, has it? It's continuing to snowball.
Yeah, it certainly has. And I mean, there's a plethora of groups out there these days. There wasn't when we started, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with that, and as far as I'm concerned, the more groups there are, the better, because that means, you know, we're keeping guys alive, we're keeping them going, and that's the most important thing out of all this.
It is indeed, mate. I totally agree with that. You know, with all the funding and everything put aside, the most important thing that we do is to keep guys alive day in, day out, week in, week out. Within
and I've
got
to tell you, look, Deds is not about Tony Miller. It's not about this stuff or not about head office or anything else. What it's about are those blokes out there like you, Phil, like these other blokes out there that are put their hand up and have stepped up the plate to help another bloke out. That's what it's about. It's about these mates helping mates, and you know, to me, that's the best thing. If we've done anything in this world, we've been able to foster that. We've been able to resurrect Australian mateship, and that's something that this country once was extremely famous for, our mateship. And somewhere along the way, we lost it. We lost it somewhere. Now we've sort of gained it back, and I hear it day in, day out with the stories from guys, and guys ring up all the time and talk about our facilitators and how this bloke's helped him and that, but they're lifesavers in the true sense of the word. And that's what this, if you're doing a show on Dads in Distress today, that's what it's about. It's about those blokes. Those blokes that turn up to meetings every week, you know, regardless of whether somebody turns up, they take a phone call in the middle of the night and talk a guy out of sticking a gun in his ear. That's what it's about. Very, very important stuff.
It is indeed, mate. It is indeed. It's the core of our business.
That's right.
And so today, Dads in Distress, how many groups are open and running?
There's around 45 actively working. You know, it goes up and down, Phil. Depends on the time of the year and of course, the volunteers. And some guys, you know, I mean, it's a struggle. I mean, a lot of our guys are digging into their own pockets to keep the phones going or paying the rent to open a meeting. I mean, I don't think that's right, but that's what they have to do because we don't have the dollars. And it's an absolute credit to these blokes that they do that, that they dig into their own pocket and keep a meeting going and... I think that's wonderful, but unfortunately, you know, it doesn't give you much to bank on as far as continuity with all the groups when blokes are having to dig in their own pockets. It's very,
yeah, that's
very hard.
Right, mate, for sure. And we've reported on the program over the last few weeks that the funding for Dads in Distress and other men's organisations ends around June this year.
That's right.
Mate, can you tell us what the latest is regarding the funding for Dads in Distress?
At the present time, I'm waiting for a meeting with the Minister, with Macklin, Jenny Macklin. I haven't had that meeting as yet. I did get an email the other day from her senior advisor requesting a meeting, so I'm awaiting that date, and as soon as I can get something, I'm here today at CONSEG meeting with Barry Williams from Lone Fathers as well, and Wayne from SPCA. And, you know, they've been talking this morning saying, look, there is talk and there are some answers. We don't know whether it's going to be positive or not. We're just fingers crossed and we'll keep pushing along.
Yep.
Regardless, we'll continue, and I've no doubt Barry's great work will continue and SPCA. But I mean, you know, this country's got to start to look. SBC, Barry just told me SBC won't. So that's a big shock. So, we've got to really, you know, get that message out to government that this is important. It's keeping men alive, and they should do something about it. You know?
Tony, there are obviously many support programs for women also that are government funded. Are you aware of any funding cuts that are to be applied to them also?
I'm not. Barry has talked about that, and he could probably talk to you more about that, but I'm not aware of any cut in women's funding at this stage. I would imagine if they were funded under the same program we were funded under, which is Local Answers, yes, they would, because Local Answers has finished. So there's a lot of agencies that are under the same funding thing that has finished because of the economic situation, I guess. The Minister has announced there will be another program, another pot of money, and it will be different to Local Answers. The Local Answers funding for us was never the correct fit. Government recognised that, but it was the only basket we could get at the time. So it enabled us to continue the work, but somewhat restricted. And they identify that, and we've certainly identified it with them, that it's not the way we'd really like to do business with that, but it certainly enabled us to continue at the time. So we're grateful that government gave us that. But look, we're not the only ones. There's a lot of support groups that are going to suffer under this funding cut, a lot.
Yep. So, mate, I guess, you know, the other part of the funding is that we can also, we also gratefully accept donations.
We certainly do.
Not only from the public, but also from the corporate sector.
Yes.
Can you explain what the best way, for anyone listening who would like to donate to the organisation, best way to do that?
Yeah, they can certainly send a cheque to Dad's in Distress, you know, PO Box J395, Coffs Harbour 2450. They can look at our website, and it's on our website, www.dadsindistress.asn.au. And there's a page on there about donations. If they put in their name and address and details, we can send them back a receipt. Anything over $2 is tax deductible. So, you know, that's a great benefit to them and any corporate people.
Yep, tax.
Took us a long time to get that DGR status, and we're very proud and very happy that we've got it.
Yep.
And very concerned because if our funding runs out and we run out, we'll lose that DGR. So.
Yep.
We want to continue in some way or form.
That's right. Now, you mentioned the website, mate. It's a really informative website. Can you tell us some of the things that appear within the site?
Well, we've got a number of stuff on there. We've got the forum, which is extremely popular. We end up with around 10 million hits per annum. We're just under 10 million hits per annum. We had a bit of problem with our last server, but we've now changed servers, and it seems to be rocking along very, very well. But, we've got a forum there. We've got a lot of information that you can email us through that. Probably the forum's the best thing to be able to get on there and now able to discuss other issues with people. There's a chat room on there as well. There's just a multitude of information. You can download, parenting orders and all sorts of information via that website. It's very, very proud of it. It's operated in Germany by a woman, nonetheless.
Yeah.
A wonderful woman that does the work for us for free, has since we began in 99, and just incredible that it's been able to help so many. And it must be relevant if we're hitting somewhere around 10 million hits per annum.
That's it, mate. You know, that's 30,000 hits each and every day.
That's right. It's got to tell a story.
It is, mate. It's a testament not only to how much separation affects so many, but also just how good the site is, you know, and how many people it can assist. So that website for everyone is www.dadsindistress.asn.au. Tony, one other part on that website which I want to talk to you personally about, for myself, is your diary. Yep, the diary on the site gives people a picture of just how big Tony Miller's heart is and the depth of your thoughts. And I just want to say personally, whenever I'm looking for inspiration, I look to you and your words. And thanks, mate.
Oh, thank you very much. It's very kind. It's strange enough that the diary is probably the most read page on the website, which is very amazing. But and I get chipped all the time, and rightly so, that I don't enter enough. But sometimes in this work, as you know, Phil, you get to a point where you just... You know, you're in more tears than you can in writing.
Absolutely,
sometimes,
mate.
You just can't put it down.
Yeah, it tends to weigh heavy at times.
It certainly does.
It yeah. does. All right, mate. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, I think that's it, mate. I've got Barry Williams is standing here patiently. He's waiting to go in. He's ready to chew the heads off in here. He's
good on
in a fighting mood this morning.
All right, mate. Well, I'll leave you to it, and we'll if you can put Barry on, I'd appreciate that.
Put Barry straight away. Thank all you. Right,
thanks,
much.
Mate. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Hello.
G'day, Barry.
How you going? Who am I speaking to?
My name's Phil, mate. How you going, Phil, from Dads in Distress?
Oh, yeah.
Mate, Barry, you've been a committed advocate for lone fathers and their families for over 30 years.
36 years, June this year.
Yep, you've lobbied in the Australian Parliament since 1976, I believe.
Yes.
Yep, and your work is recognised with lone parents and their children as a recipient of the British Empire Medal in 1980.
Yep.
The ACT Senior Australian of the Year Award in 2005. And the Prestige Regional Rural New South Wales and ACT Achievements Awards in 2007.
I also was the volunteer of the year of Canberra in 2003.
So you've been at the coalface for many, many years, mate.
Yes, well, you know, it's something that should never have to happen in this country because it is vast discrimination against the sexes.
Yep.
I mean, if you look, there's women's legal agencies everywhere to help women and that, and rightfully so, they need it, but there should be the same amount for men. It's took us years to get a men's health policy. Absolutely 25 years we've been talking about a men's health policy, and at last we're getting one.
Yep.
It took from a lot of people, it took a lot of lobbying and stress and everything like that.
Absolutely, mate.
And now I'm a men's health ambassador. I intend to use it to the best advantage to help blokes and that.
Good on you, mate. Good on you. That's great to hear, mate. Now, you've worked closely with Tony Miller and, I guess, Dads in Distress on many projects. Can you share with us what some of those committees were and if you think Tony has advocated well for fathers in Australia?
Well, Tony and I, and actually, I'm one of the first designers of the Child Support Scheme in Australia, and we were hoodwinked when we were given to design that on the American William Wisconsin Scheme and the Williams Colorado Scheme. But down the line, with a lot of lobbying, I was able to get Fraser to call John Howard to call a task force to get it to look at the Child Support Scheme, and Tony come on that with us, and Tony worked alongside me and others, and we worked our guts out to get a fairer scheme, and we think we've got a better scheme. But Tony and I have been, we go to these regular monthly meetings with FACSIA and that, all about the child support thing, and child support agency and better laws and stuff like that. We're working today with Indigenous people, trying to help Indigenous people and stuff like that. It's just an ongoing, and I know Tony, like me, is half the night dealing with suicides and things like that, and it's traumatising, and yet we're really underfunded, and we could even lose our funding come June, they tell us, and this will be an absolute disaster for all of us.
Absolutely, mate. So you're on the cutting block as well?
Yes. See, what it was after I explained the task force that John Howard set up, and Mel Buff called us in, and he said, well, Barry, you did such a good job, and Patrick Parkin spoke so highly of you. You've wanted an office for many years, and you haven't had one all these years. You've worked from your own place and that. So we're going to give you funding for an office and that. But now they tell us that communication, that was only for 2 years. Now the new government says, and the bucket's empty, so us and Diggs and Chad Perry and Council could probably not be funded after June this year.
So, Barry, do you have any thoughts regarding the multi-billion-dollar government handouts when organisations like yours and Tony's and the Chair Parenting Council and so on sees their funding on the chopping block?
Well, we do. We do have strong allies within the department that's going to talk to them. I have met with Joe Ludwick about it. Joe's going to talk to the Prime Minister. I have met with Albie Schultz. He's writing a letter to the Prime Minister. Roger Price has worked with me for many, many years, longer than anybody in family law problems. He's writing a letter.
Abishulch is going to ask, take 5 minutes and ask in the Parliament of why we are being defunded when there's so many women's groups being funded. And we have got a lot of, I've got a lot of confidence that they may come up with something, but it's not positive. And yet, this is 1st of April. And, you know, if they come June, say no more money, well, I've got an office full of gear. I've got nowhere to put it. I've got no funding. I mean, I've never been paid a... I'm one of the only ones who don't get any payment. I've did this for 36 years without even a day's wages, you know. And it's going to knock... I've put in over $700,000 of my own money in over the years to run the organisation and set LFA up, which has 22 branches around the country and 102 volunteers working just about every hour of the day, preventing suicide and helping people and that. And we just can't understand the logic of the government to want to even think about taking. I mean, the money they give DIDS and Shared Parenting Council and us under the communications program is less than $370,000 a year. That's bloody chicken feed, you know?
It is, mate. It is.
It is, and it's an absolute disgrace. But look, I don't want to jump the bandwagon and say we're finished. But I know Shared Parenting told me last night they'll have to close their doors. I know Tony's frustrated because he'd have to change his doors. And that man deserves bloody the OAM of Australia for the work he's done.
Absolutely, Tony. Mate. Absolutely.
And I've seen him so distressed after bloody dealing with suicides. It really tears your guts out. I had two, just to tell you how bad the system is out there, in the last two Thursday nights, I've spent 9.5 hours with two blokes between them. One bloke had tried twice to commit suicide before and damaged himself so badly. The doctor rang me and said, it's no good sending him any more to the authorities and that. They're not helping him. It's just, he said, I'm quite convinced there's no help out there for men and you blokes have got to help him. Well, I went out there and spent from 12:15 in the night to 3:40 in the morning with him. Sorry, to 5:40 in the morning with him. And he could still commit suicide. And it's all because, don't get me wrong, people don't commit suicide much over having to pay child support. It's about when they can't see their children are taken away and laws are made that they have access and no one will enforce it for them. The courts are useless, they can't enforce it, the system won't enforce it. And what they're saying is, well, children don't really need dads no more, and that's what they're calling all across. But let me warn everybody on whatever I'm talking on now, that with the economy downturn in Australia, like America, men are going to lose their jobs. There's going to be hundreds and thousands of them lose their jobs. Families are going to break up. The system's going to get worse. It's not going to get better. And groups like DIDS, groups like the Shared Parenting Council, and groups like Lone Fathers are needed because we're the only people that out there that's bringing a balance.
That's it, mate. And 100% right. And I can only hope that the government's listening to this and realise the value of a man's life. And, you know, as you said, $300,000 over 12 months to fund basically three organisations that are focused on men is chicken feed.
Yeah, well, they did say, well, I've got to be honest, they did say the contract when we got it was only for 2 years. But
sure.
What the work these three groups do, and I'm not patting ourselves on the back, we don't have to because it's there for everyone to see. Look at all our internet sites and look at everything we do for people.
Yep.
I mean, and, you know, Lone Fathers is not only... don't only help men, we help women, and 33.3% of our membership is women, and we work for a balance, but we want men to be treated the same as women. Now, as a new men's health ambassador, I've got an appointment coming up with Jenny Macklin too, and I'm going to tell her that the system is creating suicides at a rate far greater than what the states and that are letting people. The states are covering suicide up in every state in Australia of men's suicide. And I honestly know this because I talk to a lot of top people who tell me on the side, even politicians, it's been covered up, mate. Yeah. Go from.
All right, Barry, we've run out of time, mate. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
But I give Dids all the support in the world, mate.
Thank you very much, mate. Thanks for your time.
See you. Bye.
Bye. Welcome back. Our next guest is Leon, who is the convener of the Dads in Distress group in Newcastle and has worked tirelessly as a volunteer for Dads in Distress for many years. He has been an inspiration to many men in Newcastle and surrounding areas, and he seems to always go that little bit further with everything he does. Thank you for your time today, Leon, and welcome to Dads on the Air.
No worries, my pleasure, my absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on board.
Not a problem, mate, not a problem. Mate, can you give us just a bit of background? In what year did the Newcastle group of Dads in Distress start?
I believe it started somewhere mid-2002. I'm not exactly sure because I started going there in March 2003. A couple of guys headed it up at that time. There was a Rod, a Rob and a James who moved on as their family stuff settled down and they moved into new family situations. They moved on and and over the years I've sort of taken up
the mantle. You
know, yep.
Yeah, good on you, mate, good on you. So when and where is it held?
Oh, it's at Tice Hill Primary School, 7:30 to 9:30 every Wednesday without fail.
Yep.
That's the Newcastle. That's the Newcastle one, but we've recently opened one out at Lake Macquarie.
Mm-hmm.
Newcastle was too big, and the guys have been behind that, and so there's one out there as well. We might talk about that a bit later, though.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Yeah, and as you said, you know, you up there in Newcastle run one of our most attended groups as far as bums on seats. On average, how many dads turn up each and every week?
Well, I was sort of looking at this a few days ago, actually, and I think we're averaging around 26 guys attending on average, which was way too many, you know, and there's all sorts of pressure when there's so many guys because you're trying to allow for each guy to have his say and be listened to, you know, and we'd have to split into two groups, and we'd do two meetings in the one place. About a year ago, we'd talked about having a Lake Macquarie group, and the guys were really sort of like a close-knit group and they didn't want to split, but they managed to do it now, and it's slightly load at Newcastle. But we're still getting about 16 attending at the moment at Newcastle. But it's certainly lightened the load over there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And I guess in that last 6 years, as you know, we all have in our working years with DIDS, you've seen it all. You've seen.
Yeah.
I've
heard the stories, mate. You know, I've seen. Can't say I've seen them, but I've certainly heard the nightmares and what the guys are experiencing and what pushes them to the edge. You know.
Yep. And you know, thank God you're there, mate.
Well, yeah. You know, I've just been looking through some testimonials from different guys, and the beautiful things they write, and just about every testimonial says, you know, I was at the edge, and I certainly know that I've been there before on a number of occasions, and. And that's what we do. We know we give the guys a safe place to sit and get it off their chest, and I think that puts them in a safe place to walk through their weekly lives.
Yep, yep. Now, yeah, you've also got an immense amount of public support up in Newcastle. What do you contribute that to, and what sort of initiatives does the group involve itself in?
Well, Newcastle's always been really well attended. You know, and I was sort of just going over the figures the other day, thinking, you know, It's about 1,200 guys, I think, have bums on seats at Newcastle looking at that 26 on average a meeting, you know. Like, a lot of those guys are like core guys who keep coming back, and they're the ones who get the benefit, the ones who keep coming back and just getting stronger and stronger. And I sort of looked at that over a few years, and I just thought, how many guys are actually coming before us? And, you know, it's not like I can go anywhere in Newcastle without getting a nod or bumping into somebody who's been before us, you know. It's everywhere, and I must say I feel really proud about that. And yet, you know, you're talking about the support. Well, I've sort of been out and about, and I have a few directions that I guide guys. One of them is the dancing, you know, putting something positive back in their lives. Some guys are going through women hating stages, and I think one way to address that is possibly put a bit more culture into their lives, and if they're open to it and they're the type of guy that suits it, we steer them off towards dancing, you know. So the Latin dancers of Newcastle and surrounding districts put this massive ball on. Geez, we've got heavy rain up here. I hope it's not too...
Yeah, I can sort of hear it in the background there, mate.
Okay, well, I hope it goes away.
That's all right.
But anyway, this massive ball, you should have seen it, Phil. It was incredible. I couldn't believe. I was so touched by all the people coming together. Then, you know, the Movember campaign, and we were approached by United Group Rail, who have a yearly Movember thing, and I was blown away by them offering to send a quarter of the funds they raised towards Newcastle Dids. Now,
that's
but
amazing,
then again, if I just sort of step back, I can think of one or two guys that actually have had working relationships within that industry. And so, you know, just by the guys coming before us in the huge numbers, you can start to understand why the support is behind us, because a lot of guys are getting support. Take that a little bit further, you know, the phones that we have here. Like, half the calls I reckon I get are from the affected women. You know, the new partners, the mothers who are seeing their sons go through this, the sisters or the daughters even, you know, that just see their men in a very desperate state, and they're reaching out, because the men, you know, they try and handle things themselves, but really you do need a supporting shoulder to lean upon in this thing, in this... marital disharmony.
Indeed you do, mate.
It affects so many. And, you know, and the support of Newcastle, just to go back to that question, you know, we did a fundraiser at a local hardware store, and we put a fair bit of effort into organising and being well presented, and you should have seen the support that came out of the public. It was incredible. People coming up, not even buying a sausage chisel, were dropping $10 into the donation tin. Wish you were around when I was going through it, you know. It was incredible. And like, I'm getting a tingle as I speak to you, as I just sort of recount, you know, the payback that I actually get for being associated in an industry, well, it's not an industry, a support service that does so much good.
And that's exactly what we are, mate, is that, just that, a support service. You know, somewhere for a guy who is, you know, perhaps doing it a bit tough and, you know, not dealing well with the separation, just to come and just to chill and just to be with others that are going through a similar thing. So, you know, there is a lot of value in that, and, you know, it, as you said, it keeps blokes alive, you know. And then the unique thing that obviously you do so well up there is that you then engage these guys to get back into the social scene and to get back out into the community and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, you know, you see the guys come in and they're bent over and they're shattered.
Yep.
And they have a hard time sort of opening up. They have a hard time listening to the guys perhaps provide some guidance for what they can do, you know. But if they keep coming, if they keep putting their bum on that seat, they actually start to straighten up and they become stronger. And they become valued and validated because they're being listened to. The system does not seem to validate and listen to men or value them in a family context or in a more macro wider community context. You know, we just don't seem to be valued.
Well, if you saw the Four Corners program last night too, on the soldiers coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq, shell-shocked, you know, psychological traumas, and there wasn't even anybody at the airport to meet guys when they got back? I mean, it just seems like that no one cares about men. If it's a woman's problem, sure, they fund them, all the girls are there, throw money at them, you know, pat them on the head, give them everything. Blokes, nothing. Just ignore us.
Yeah, look, mate, you're sending a shiver right over me now because my son's in the army, you know, and a bit of a sad moment, you know, to think that. Yeah.
All right, Leon, we're going to have to leave it there, mate. Is there anything you'd like to add just before we...
Oh, look, I just wanted to add that to anybody down podcasting this thing anywhere around the world, around Australia, guys, just get together and support each other. Start up groups and just sort of be there for each other. You know, I once sat in our group and I said it's like a bunch of wise Indian chiefs just chewing over the ills of the tribe, you know. And when do you get that? When you can't go to the pub and get that, yeah. Your relatives don't know what you're really experiencing. It's a good safe forum, and guys, just make it happen. And to you guys at Dad's on the Air, you know, I've been listening to you for years, and I just wanted to say that people that are just sort of tuned in and haven't been into this, or this is the first episode they're listening to, perhaps go back into the archives and some of the fantastic information coming through. Dr. Stephen Baskerville, Aaron Prizzi, Maggie Dent, you guys know these names, Stephanie Ramage and her book, you know, and the other people out there that are great people working in the ills of our society, Sue Price, Warwick Marsh, and Greg Anderson, fabulous, amazing people. You know, let's listen to their work and value it and learn from it.
Thanks, Leon. Thanks for joining us today on Dad's on the Air, mate.
No worries. Good on you, guys. You do a fantastic job.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. Okay, that was Leon from Newcastle. We'll move right along now, and our next guest joins us is Dad, who has attended one of our groups. Like many, he's found himself at a stage where he was alone and isolated and trying to deal with not only the relentless hounding by the Child Support Agency, but also family court proceedings, AVOs and criminal hearings, and all the trimmings, all while still trying to come to terms with how his relationship had ended and his feelings about being separated from his children. Good morning, how are you?
Not too bad, and yourself?
Oh, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Mate, your story is tough. There's no dispute about that.
Yep.
Can you tell me what it's like to walk into a DIDS meeting for the first time?
Well, to begin with, I didn't even know such a group existed. I was suffering in the throes of what can only be called the debilitating disease of depression, and I wasn't aware that such a compassionate group of men even existed until I saw it on a Channel 9 program. On that particular day, I sheepishly contacted Dad's in Distress, not knowing what to expect or even where I found the courage to do so, but it wasn't long before I realised that I was going to forge some lifelong friendships. I mean, I found a group of men that were in a similar position to myself that could understand and just listen, you know, and it was probably one of the very first times in my life that I felt that I was being given something for nothing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, How long was it before you felt comfortable enough to share your story within the DIDS group?
It wasn't very long for me at all, because it was Christmas 07. Christmas was looming for me, and I was just completely out of pocket due to financial reasons with the family law solicitor, and I took the impression that I was sticking up for my rights and the rights of my children, so I starved myself, living on Weet-Bix for probably 2.5 months, trying to come up with the $800 that my solicitor wanted to continue my case. Immediately after I paid this bill, I felt completely sick. I mean, my children don't care about solicitors and the argument between their parents. They care about Christmas, and for me, I had absolutely nothing for them to offer them for Christmas, and I was just sick, absolutely sick. And it was like the second or third meeting that I'd attended at Dad's in Distress when I was given some toys that were donated by Dads in Distress to my family, and that was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it was, mate. I actually remember that Christmas well. Those toys were donated by Rotary, and I had a car full of toys. I rang up a few of the groups that we had and organised for us all to meet and basically handed out these toys to these dads. For this particular dad's thing, I never knew just how tough he was doing it. You know, he said to me in June last year, he came up to me and he said, "Phil," he said, "those toys," he says, "you've got no idea how much it meant to me." I'm starting to feel the emotion of this myself. Rob is the type of bloke that generally goes out and recounted how he would spend thousands of dollars on his kids during the Christmas break. He would always have all the trimmings under the tree, all the huge presents this particular year. As he recounted, he had no money. We gave him some toys, and he said it was the best Christmas ever. His son had such a great time. It was just a couple of trucks, but it meant that both his son and himself could sit there and talk with each other and play, and you know, the money didn't matter. It was all about the feeling. We'll be back.
Loneliness, how could I be on your side?
drive so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air. And welcome back. Unfortunately, we've lost Rob, so we'll go on to our next guest. Our next guest is Chris. Chris is a dad who also found Dad's in Distress at a very tough time in his life. He first contacted DIDS in 2004. He went on to open and facilitate a group in his local town, and he's currently the Hunter Area Regional Chairman and Chairman of the National Management Committee for Dads in Distress. Chris, welcome to the program.
Good morning, mate. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, mate. Mate, can you start off with telling us perhaps how many people actually are involved with the committee and sit on the committee?
At the moment we have... You got me, mate. I haven't got the numbers in front of me. We have roughly 8 guys on the National Committee.
Yep. And they've all come from a history of separation and stuff, had they, mate? Or did they bring in...
Well, bar 2, mate. We've got 2 guys who just basically heard what we did and wanted to get on board and help, mate.
Yeah. Yep. And offer their professional assistance.
That's correct.
Yep. Just quickly, what is the... what's the feeling of the committee regarding the funding or the loss of the funding?
Oh, mate, we're all very upset about it. We live in hope.
Yep.
We really do live in hope. And, yeah, we really sort of don't know which way it's going to go, but we do live in hope. And there is a little bit of a feeling that we may get some help.
Yep.
But, yeah, a bit unsure at the moment.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Well, we're talking with Tony not long ago, and he indicated that the minister's left-hand man, if you want to call it that, has basically asked him to come down and go through a couple of things. So, you know, as you said, it's sort of up in the air at the moment, and we're still not sure. So that's where that's at. But as far as the future of Dads in Distress as an organisation, you know, these groups will still continue to run. Most of the groups will continue to run. All it's, I guess, does is hamper our ability to be able to expand the organisation.
There's no doubt that an organisation such as ours needs funding to get the job done. No two ways about it. Yes, definitely, we are surrounded by some absolutely wonderful guys who have seen, like myself, have seen just what a wonderful organisation did this. I kid you not when I say I honestly believe that I'm alive today because of Dad's in Distress. And there's a lot of guys that I've spoken to from around the country who feel exactly the same way, who, like me, I wish there was some sort of employment that I could do, like, within the organisation. I wish there was money coming in to employ me, because I'd put my whole life towards it if I could. And a lot of guys feel the same.
Yeah.
If the money's not there, mate, I've got to earn a living. I'm now remarried with a family, mate, that I have to feed. And it breaks my heart that I can't do more for the organisation.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And as you said, I hear this time and time again that, you know, lots of guys owe their life to DIDS. You know, they honestly would not be on this planet anymore if it wasn't for the organisation.
I had an experience, be a while ago now, but I'll never forget it as long as I live. I had a fellow I spoke to over the phone one day who was in the same situation, virtually been in the same situation as I was, who was ready to give up. And I met with that guy on that day at the drop of a hat to help him out. Now, I was in the shopping centre about 6 months after this. In the middle of a crowded shopping centre, a guy comes running up and threw his arms around and gave me a big hug saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. I mean, all I did was carried on what Tony had started.
Yep.
It gave you an indication of the depth of feeling. You know, I'd be embarrassed to go and give another guy a hug in the middle of a shopping centre, but this guy didn't even seem fazed. He was that blown away just by the fact that DIDS was there for him.
Yeah, it can be a very emotional time, and obviously, you know, these guys do realise the value of DIDS, and they do realise that, you know, it is because of DIDS that they are around. They still have, you know, the opportunity to have contact with their children, you know, and their children have the advantage of still having Dad.
Yeah, definitely.
So Dads in Distress as an organisation has worked to advocate for many men, and brought to the attention of government many irregularities and inconsistencies with the child support and family law arenas. Can you see that happening still in the future?
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of work to be done. There is a lot of work to be done. We have a lot of laws in this country that were set up to protect the women and children, and rightly so. We desperately needed them. The unfortunate situation we face, and the reason I believe, this is my personal belief, that we are in the situation we are, is that they have gone a little bit overboard and can be very easily misunderstood or misrepresented, causing problems for genuine good fathers who just want to spend time with their kids. So there is a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of meetings and a lot of discussion, and it's hard because we really need to get guys who will want to work and put the point across, because I tell you, it's very hard. I've often thought myself, you know, we're really pushing it uphill, but by the same token, it has to be done for the sake of our children and our children's children. It just has to be done.
Yep. So where is it at personally for you at the moment? Obviously, you've got the situation where you're on the chairman of the national, you're the chairman of the national committee and the chairman of the regional committee. Those sorts of things will continue if the funding ceases, or?
As far as I know, the guys at Newcastle are determined to continue one way or another, and, yeah, on a national level we are determined to continue in some shape or form. So, yeah, my commitment is still there. The funding is basically what keeps it all going in a bigger way. It,
yep.
it gives us opportunities to expand. Without it, we're really limited in what we can do in terms of promoting the organisation and getting the awareness out there. Getting the awareness out is the biggest hurdle we face, and it can't be done without money.
No, that's right, mate. And I guess, you know, there's a lots, well, from a point of view that I've seen, you know, lots of guys come to us for help, but they're not at a point in their life where they have the strength to actually advocate for themselves or to be, you know, writing to politicians and stuff like that, because they've got so much other stuff going on and, you know, all the emotional upheaval. And that's where I see that, you know, us as an organisation, you know, can be a little bit detached from that and have that strength to actually advocate for these men.
Most definitely.
You know, and that's only obviously part of our work. You know, the majority of our work is just keeping these groups running day in, day out, week in, week out, making sure the doors are open at the venues, making sure that there's people there ready to ready just to listen.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, getting the doors open is a major thing as well, because there are rent that has to be paid, there are phone bills that have to be paid. Of course, this is all part of it, definitely.
It is, mate, it is, you know, and it used to be, you know, and you still find pockets in society where they'll say, oh, you know, that's fine, you know, well, we understand what you're doing, we understand the value of it, here's our venue for nothing. But there's still, you know, 2009, you know, there's still people that want to try and make a profit out of all this, you know. So therefore, there are some places in some local government areas where we have to pay rent. There are some phones, obviously, that we have to look after. And again, even with the funding that DIDS has had over the last couple of years, those sorts of things weren't covered by the funding agreement. Is that correct?
That's correct. In a lot of things, it wasn't. That's right.
So you know, for the organisation, the government's given us this funding, asked us to report on all these milestones, et cetera, but in some sense they didn't fund us fully because, you know, part of that hampered, you know, trying to find venues that, you know, were free and trying to find, you know, trying to keep up the upkeep of the facilitators' phones and all that sort of stuff as well.
Another issue we face is a lot of guys don't want to be known as milestones in this field.
Yep.
I personally, for a long time, I mean, I'm quite proud to stand up nowadays and say, yes, I'm a dad in distress and dads in distress help me. But for the first few years, I was petrified of admitting it. I didn't want to tell anybody that I wasn't coping, that I wasn't, you know, the best father I could be without somebody having to hold me up. And I'll tell you what, that's got to be a nationwide problem. And that's what holds us back in a lot of ways. The guys do have to come forward and say, yes, you know, we do need this help. And after they've had the help, they do need to come out and say, yes, I'm proud they helped me. I'm glad to be alive.
Yep.
Thanks to these guys. And I can fully understand how hard it is for a lot of guys to do that, but that doesn't help our cause.
No, you're right, mate, it doesn't. And as you said, you know, it's about getting these guys to actually voice it and, you know, come out of their cave and say, you know, if it wasn't for these guys, you know, this cave would be closed.
yeah, it's actually quite liberating to get out and say it. I mean, I'm on a suicide prevention network in this area as well, and they thrive on me getting up and talking about what Dads in Distress does. They all love to hear it, and it's mainly women.
Yep. So
it's actually quite liberating to get out there and say what's going on and how you're feeling and what you're thinking to everybody. It's actually good.
Yeah, and we get lots of calls from women, as I'm sure you do as well.
That's right.
You know, and it could be both sides of the coin. It can be, you know, new partners. It can be, and it can also be, you know, ex-partners. So.
Well, an interesting sideline is that through my involvement with Dads in Distress, I was actually put onto Dads in Distress by my new mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And through my involvement in Dads in Distress, my now wife, when I was going through it, I mean, I was fighting for my children. She was watching me fight for my children, and she was struggling really bad. And it was through Dads in Distress that we were actually able to make contact with the wives of some of the other guys and link up and support my wife. Now, she wouldn't have got that support from anywhere else as well, because she talked to counsellors and other people about it, and they couldn't help her. They didn't know what to say to her. So it's actually through Dads in Distress that my wife was actually able to get help and get support
for
the issues she was dealing with. So it goes beyond just Dads in Distress, really.
There you go, mate. It does. You know, and you know, to build on that, not only are we helping dads, but because we're helping dads, we're obviously helping families. You know, we're helping the extended family, we're helping the children, we're helping the ex-partner, we're helping the grandparents, the aunties, the uncles, the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been emailing in the last 24 hours with a grandmother from New Zealand whose son and children are in Perth.
Yep.
And I've been talking to this woman about the child support system and trying to help her get help with issues with the child support agency. There's someone in New Zealand for grandchildren in Perth. I'm on the east coast of Australia. So
yep, there you go.
It's amazing. It just blows me away how far-reaching and how different the issues that can be surrounding this and how many people are affected. Yes, it is amazing.
It is, mate. It is. All right, I'll have to leave it there. Chris, thank you for your time.
Thanks, mate. All the best.
Thank you, mate. All the best, and Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us. Okay, that was Chris Stokes, who is the chairman of the National Committee of Dads in Distress. Next on line is Peter Smith. Peter is on the line today to discuss what DIDS has done for him. He's just another dad in a long line that has been thankful to find a Dads in Distress group in his area and has been attending a group here in Liverpool for the last 3 to 4 months. Good morning, Peter. No, we seem to have a problem. All right, we might just quickly go to a track, and we'll be back.
House, empty life, no family, no wife. I can stay up all night, I can run round in the nude, I can eat steak or any other type of food. I got no money, I got no kids.
And we have Peter Smith on the line now. Pete, you dropped out before. We got you.
Yeah, mate.
That's good, mate. Mate, thanks for joining us this morning. Although there are many common threads which a dad going through separation will face, as most of us do, your separation is a little different to others. Can you briefly describe what's happened in your situation?
Well, originally, when the first went through separation and divorce, and I went and found DIDS and got a lot of information off them, and I ran my own court case and everything with the children's court, the family court I should say, and came out, you know, with a 50-50 sort of arrangement, and everything was that was court ordered, and that was pretty good. But then within the last 2 years, there's been a lot of doc's reports done on my ex-wife, and we've found that she's been doing all sorts of abuse towards her own children and also my son. And when I found out about this, they just asked me to sign off and they were going to leave the situation the way it was. And I said, no way in the world. I mean, you know, this is just proof that, you know, the woman shouldn't have the children whatsoever. And then...
What kind of abuse? Could you just kind of elaborate?
Well, it was physical, mental abuse. She was not providing them with the things that they needed for everyday use, everyday schooling, and which is still going on today.
So I understand that you first attended a DIDS group in Parramatta some years ago.
Yeah, when I first separated, we actually, it was funny, child support actually put me onto them.
Okay, yep.
And I went to the meetings and I got a lot of information, and because there's nothing out there for a bloke when they first separate. There's plenty of information there for the women on how to do this and do that and rip the system off, but there's no way that there's any anything there for any blokes that to help us in any way, shape or form. And to go to DIDS and find out the information that I needed and how to put, what forms I needed to put into the court, because it's a great big melting pot out there and nobody really knows what's needed, and what's not needed.
Absolutely. You know,
I put a form in. I remember putting a form in after speaking to a chamber magistrate, and the form that I put in was to do with the local court. It was had exactly the same numbers and everything else, and all the way through my family court, you're the one that's on the wrong paperwork, and they really drag the chain, because there's one word different on a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult system to try and navigate through, and especially when you're trying to do all your own work and not all of us can afford solicitors. I know I was in the situation myself where I couldn't afford a solicitor and, had to, fumble through the family law proceedings. It's not easy, is it, mate?
No, it's not. And as I say, there's nobody out there. And I actually brought up with the Family Law Reform Commission the other week that really there should be a book written for both sides. Called Separation for Dummies, or the Family Law Court for Dummies or something like that, because there is just absolutely nothing there to give anybody any information, and you ring up and they say you need a form XYZ, and then you go to the front counter of the office and you say, look, I need a form XYZ, and they say -2 or -3, and you go, wait a minute, I was told it was a form XYZ, and you just get confused, and you can put all this paperwork in and then find that it's supposed to be a form -2 and you've got a -3. Sorry, it's on the wrong paperwork.
So I guess it sort of feels like these government departments and the family law courts are basically controlling the whole situation as far as who goes where, who has to jump through what hoops.
I mean, because everybody else seems to just get legal aid straight away. I mean, maybe the system should be that everybody, either get rid of lawyers out of the whole situation and get it down to being, two people getting in there and having their tin tacks in front of a magistrate or a judge and letting the judge make their decision. Or everybody gets, it doesn't matter, how much money you got, you all get the same class of lawyer.
Yep.
Yeah, and that'll get rid of all the barristers and what have you, making heaps out of it. I actually call them barristers instead of what I normally call them.
Good on you, mate. So with all this barrage of feelings and emotions and, being pushed from pillar to post from all these different departments, how is it that you, Pete, deal with those sorts of emotions?
Oh, sometimes it kind of get a bit heated under the collar, but you try to take a lot of it tongue-in-cheek, and, as you get a bit older and a bit wiser, you take it a bit tongue-in-cheek and sort of roll with the punches and, try to make these departments sort of notice that you're not this angry, horrible person that wants to yell and scream and shout. I mean, the calmer you stay with them, the further you seem to get.
Yep, and do you think being able to voice these frustrations in a safe place such as a DIDS meeting has been beneficial?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, just the idea of having a group of people there that have all got similar, even though they can be a mile apart, different problems, but to have those people there to support each other and discuss what they've been through, and in one case it'll help another bloke not have to go through that same situation, because it's already that one's already been marked off the book, that's how you deal with that, and which helps.
Absolutely, mate, we're just going to have to wrap it up. Just lastly, what would you say to any dad who's listening who's interested in attending a group?
Well, I reckon they should get out there, even if they think that they can't help somebody else in any way, shape or form, come along and sit down, tell your own story and listen to what's going on.
All right, Pete. Well, thanks for joining us, mate. We've run out of time.
No worries.
I appreciate your time, mate.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Very much. Bye.
And that was Dads on the Air, the Dads in Distress special. As we've covered today, DIDS is a hugely important organisation. It keeps guys alive. It keeps, society going, kids with their dads. And it's needed. If anyone needs any help, contact www.dadsindistress.asn.au or phone 1300 853437. Thanks for listening. We're dads on the air. We're here 'cause we care. We ask for